From Tribune Tower, WGN Radio presents A Conversation.
I want to make one thing perfectly clear.
A dialogue.
What are you prepared to do?
An astute debate.
Everything within the law.
And a peek behind the curtain of politics.
And then what are you prepared to do?
I think Chicago is not only the center of the country, I think it's the center of the world.
Don't tread on them.
Where did this statement come from?
This is the Sunday Spin. Your host is the Chicago Tribune's Rick Pearson.
Good Sunday morning, everyone. I'm Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune, and welcome to this week's edition of the Sunday Spin for July the 30th, 2017. Yes, the last Sunday in July, and we start to look toward August. Welcome to our weekly look at the politics and policies that shape our lives as we take you from Chicago and Springfield all the way to Washington, D.C. Time to grab the Sunday paper, get that cup of coffee, and we'll try to get everything off to a good and informative start for your end of July and look forward to August. Well, I stayed up too late and watched the Cubs game, but I'm glad I did. Hayward with the game-winning home run in the top of the 11th inning, and I mean, this is an important series, but I did not know how tough Milwaukee could be when it comes to pitching, Sam.
That's because nobody knows who's on the team, right? I mean, if you look at the roster, you don't know anybody, and you think, well, they're going to bottom out, they're going to regress, but they do a lot of things really well. They're young, they're athletic, they throw strikes, and they're really speedy on the bases, too. They do a lot of things that that the Cubs don't like to see.
But, you know, going into this series after the Brewers just had that horrible record that allowed the Cubs and the Cubs winning to get them back into first place. I expected that, you know, after the Crosstown Classic with the Sox and they're on a roll going into Milwaukee, that this would be much easier than it really has been. And now the series evened up 1-1 and we'll see what happens in today's game. But, yeah, I agree. No one knows who these Brewers are. But it's been great baseball to watch. That's the thing.
Brewers won 2-1 Friday. The Cubs won 2-1 yesterday.
I like games like that. You know, I don't need to have the homer fest or the home run fest, that kind of thing. This is what good baseball really is.
Was it Thursday or earlier in the week where the Washington Nationals just
they smoked them
to bed, the Brewers
15-2.
Yeah. I saw part of that game. Wow.
Yeah, that's what I mean. It's just I'm being too much of a Cubs rooter, but I just thought it'd be a cakewalk this weekend, and it really has not turned out to be that way. But just great baseball, and then you look at this great weather that we're having on top of it. I can't remember just a better stretch of days in Chicago than we've had.
And we're going to continue to have them. We'll have another day like today, tomorrow. Looking at the forecast here, the same will hold true for Tuesday. Wednesday, a chance of some thunderstorms in the afternoon or the evening. Same thing on Thursday and Friday as well. But today, tomorrow, Tuesday, into Wednesday, looks fantastic.
I mean, I've had to do some stuff up at Channel 9, you know, putting on the suit and tie and everything, and I kind of normally dread doing that this time of year.
But it can be so hot,
right? But
and
it's
sticky.
But it was just so very comfortable. And last week, they have, you know, they do that movies in the park thing out at Millennium Park, and
right,
I went and saw Network.
Oh my gosh!
Yeah. And
well, I talk about a movie that in some ways was ahead of its time.
Oh, in every
way. Isn't it something?
In every way, it was ahead of its time.
Wow. And,
just for references for Sam, this movie came out my senior year of high school.
Yeah, I was going to say around 1976, I think.
That's correct.
Yeah.
That is the year.
Yeah.
I think he was trying not to give the year. Schwab.
Well, I'm just thinking back to my college days when I first saw this.
I was going to give the year. I was going to do that. But I just had forgotten how great Paddy Chayefsky's script was. And just
how great Peter Finch was in the title role.
Peter Finch.
Brilliant.
I mean, just a fantastic cast, and just how prescient that writing
mm-hmm.
was about what media was going to be. And, you know, think of this is before, you know, cell phones and social media and all of that, and reality show television as that's dominating before really, you know, the cable news networks of all stripes and politics, and just watching Peter Finch as Howard Beale, and obviously delivering the...
Is it William Holden?
Bill Holden.
Yeah.
Yes.
A young Robert Duvall.
Yes.
A young Faye Dunaway.
Faye Dunaway, absolutely great. I mean, all great performances here. And the whole idea of corporate ownership of media and what that can lead to. And
that's 40 years ago.
Okay, now you're hurting.
Sorry.
but
seriously, you mentioned Patty Chayefsky's writing. Patty Chayefsky came out of a generation of the first generation of TV writers when they were writing plays for television and you know, programs like The Twilight Zone.
Well, Playhouse 90.
Playhouse 90 and Thriller. You know, he was involved with programs like that, which, you know, were kind of went by the wayside as the 60s and early 70s, you know, moved through. We moved through those decades. And so he was writing, you know, kind of, it was a catharsis for him to put that together.
Well, and it, you know, it's like long form kind of drama,
mm-hmm.
like long form writing, which is so enjoyable when there's, but the whole concept of that movie, and it was like, and I had a long day at work, and it was kind of like, no, but it was just so great to sit out at Millennium Park and watch this. It was just fantastic. And there were probably, I don't know, maybe a couple thousand people out there. And I really had to wonder, I think more people were there just because there was a movie
rather than going there on purpose to see the movie.
And rather what the movie was and what it is. And,
well, did you gauge the crowd reaction then afterward? Did you get a sense of, you know, the people that were there came away saying, wow, that really had a message to it?
No.
Oh.
No.
Hmm.
Not really. I mean, it was more, you know, I think it was just people enjoying the weather and, hey, there was something to see, something to do. Something on the screen. Mm-hmm. And that, I mean, obviously when Howard Beale says, I'm as mad as hell and not going to take it anymore, which is actually what he said. I'm not mad as hell. I'm mad as hell.
That's right.
I'm as mad as hell is how he said it. You know, obviously there was a crowd react to that.
Well, everybody knows that line.
Sure.
And so there would be a reaction to that, but, amazing in the movie, that scene that shows the power of television where, you know, people in and around New York and environs are raising their windows and saying the same thing.
And then,
William Holden can hear this.
Yes, and Faye Dunaway is asking some of the producers to call the affiliates to ask if, and, you know, we're hearing them yell out the windows in Atlanta and
things like that. Right, right, right.
And... The drive for ratings, the drive for attention, and, you know, here is poor Peter Finch, and we're watching him just dissemble as a human being.
Dissemble and disintegrate, yes.
And it drives the ratings.
Yeah.
And, I mean, can you think of anything you might be watching today
these days?
There are
some parallels here. In...
Yeah, exactly, exactly. It really made me think, and it still caused concern. You know, this was entertainment 40 years ago, that movie. Now it's real.
And that's, as I said, prophetic.
That's the scary part of it. But, yeah, I'd encourage anybody to go back and take a look at this.
Have you seen this movie, Sam?
Nope.
You haven't seen Network?
Nope.
Highly recommended.
I'll add it to the list.
Yes, you should.
Yeah. It's up there with Cool Runnings and whatever else you guys talk about.
Car Wash.
Oh, please. Don't put the...
Oh, come on.
You cannot
on.
Put
you know
Network
me.
In the same
no,
category.
No, of course not.
It's Car Wash. Jeez.
Came out around the same time, though.
I'm sure. Oh, man. Thanks. I make this serious build-up, and then you turn around and you throw Car Wash at it.
No, I think you guys told me about a month ago I needed to watch The Big Chill.
Big Chill is another one. Yeah,
yes,
I haven't seen that one either.
Yep. What,
Blazing Saddles?
Oh, I've seen that one.
Okay. Well, so you are used to going back in the Wayback Machine to mm-hmm. see.
Yeah.
The Wayback Machine.
Okay. All right. I just wanted to make sure because, you know, we're trying to give you, Sam, an educational grounding such that you would not find in an institution of higher education. That's part of what
this
we...
This is his cultural... Yes. This is the culture minute of the Sunday Spin.
We strive for longer than a minute. Thank you very much. Wow.
The cultural corner. Let's call it the cultural corner.
It's getting rough in here. I'm ready to start this Sunday morning. Oh, well, Dave's here to keep us up to date on all the news. Sam's got all the sports. Producer Jasmine's here to field your phone calls at 312-981-7200. You can text us at 312-981-7200. We're on Facebook at facebook.com/thesundayspin. We're on Twitter at Simple Sunday Spin. Engineer Bob is here eyeing a trip to the Riverwalk later today. Remember, you can find all of our shows on WGNradio.com. And you have to tune away. You can go there to find these shows. You can also find our podcast at iTunes by searching for my name, Rick Pearson. Up ahead today, after the 7:30 news update from Dave, we'll speak with Lauren Chulgen. She is just leaving as the City Hall reporter with WBEZ-FM to return to her native New Hampshire. We'll talk about her time here in Chicago and kind of give her get her exit interview on Chicago and state politics. After the 8 o'clock news update, we'll talk to Democratic State Representative Rob Martwick of Chicago. The debate over the fate of Illinois' public schools is still up in the air, and we'll talk about that with him and other issues as well. After the 8:30 news and sports update, we'll be joined by Alderman Anthony Beal. He's the alderman in the 9th Ward of the city, and we'll talk about his views on local property tax assessments, TIF funding, and the recent decision to rebate some money to folks over that controversial city red light system. That's all coming up, but it's time for a quick break. You're listening to the Sunday Spin on WGN.
I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, "I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!"
And then the teletypes come in.
Oh, you've got me worked up now. I think that should be your new theme music.
No.
That should be the new theme music.
If I'm a reporter, I'm not a columnist. And it's not my job to opine and make recommendations like go to your window. And although that's not to say I haven't felt that way several times in recent weeks.
Especially the other week when you snapped at me in the hall.
Well, but that was, again...
With reason. With reason.
Yes, that was supposed to be my vacation.
With reason. That's right.
And we all know what happened to that. Yeah, happy 4th of July. And by the way, your taxes have gone up.
Just wait.
But yeah, that's the that was the theme from the Howard Beale show. And,
you know what? I think he passed away. He was nominated for Best Actor, and he passed away just before the Academy Awards, and his wife received the award in his honor.
Wow.
For that movie.
I did not know that. So the movie truly was more prophetic in several ways.
How about it? How about it?
And that's not a spoiler alert, okay, Sam? I don't want to give anything away. Because I know you will go watch this.
I will put it on the list, I promise.
I mean, now that you've heard the theme song for the Howard Beale show, that's got to make you...
Oh, that's irresistible.
Isn't it? Good thing you can't find the cricket tape. yes.
I'm going to go dig up the theme from Car Wash now.
Good, you go do that. I'll get on with the spin through national politics. And maybe it's appropriate to play the theme from the Howard Beale show with this. Of course, we had the blockbuster news on Friday afternoon that Donald Trump had dumped Reince Priebus as his chief of staff, replacing him with his Homeland Security Secretary, retired General John Kelly.
Reince is a good man. John Kelly will do a fantastic job. General Kelly has been a star, done an incredible job thus far, respected by everybody. A great, great American. Reince Priebus, a good man. Thank you very much.
Priebus went on CNN to say that it was his decision to step down, and he maintained he was going to stay a loyal supporter of Donald Trump. But the fact that Priebus went on CNN to discuss this was viewed as a way to diss Trump, since Trump keeps recalling CNN fake news. Here's Reince Priebus.
Anytime either one of us think that we need to make a change or move in a different direction, let's just talk about it and get it done. And so I think the president thought about that, and we talked about it yesterday, and I resigned and he accepted my resignation. But this is about the president. It's about moving his agenda forward. I think he's made a smart decision with General Kelly, and I think he's going to do a great job. And I'm looking forward to the future. One other thing, I'm always going to be a Trump fan. I'm on Team Trump, and I look forward to helping him achieve his goals and his agenda for the American people.
Now, clearly, Priebus's days were numbered after Anthony Scaramucci, the new White House communications director, delivered an expletive-filled phone call rant to Ryan Lizza of The New Yorker. We knew this wasn't going to be a conventional White House, and things aren't getting any better. But here's Scaramucci, albeit less profane, speaking to Fox News and vowing how he will get the leaks to stop. And you have to wonder if his belief that Priebus was a leaker led to the change in chief of staff. Here's Scaramucci, the mooch.
I want to hit a cultural reset button. Second thing is we got to get the leak stopped. If we don't get the leak stopped, I am a business person, and so I will take dramatic action to stop those leaks. And then the third thing is I'll be traveling with the president this week, and we're going to focus and refine the messaging from the White House. He's one of the most effective communicators that's ever been born. And we're going to make sure that we get that message out directly to the American people. And I think that arbitrage spread, the gap between how certain people think of him and how I see him, or say like someone like Ivanka sees him, that will start to narrow.
So that's Anthony Scaramucci, the new communications director. He has direct access to the president. It'd be interesting to see now with General Kelly taking over as chief of staff if that continues. We're going to take a quick break. You're listening to the Sunday Spin on WGN. Welcome back to the Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson, the Chicago Tribune. You know, politics can be awfully distasteful, and I thought maybe for something different, we might try to have something that at least provides some nutrition and sustenance. And so our good friend Dolly, that used to work here at the radio station doing traffic, mentioned the Harvest Room in Palos Heights. And joining me in studio, and thankfully even bringing in some breakfast this morning, is Chef Tyler Nelson. Chef, thank you so much for joining me this morning.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So I understand, like, this is a whole revamping of the Harvest Room, and farm to table is the whole concept that you guys are doing.
Yeah, definitely. We try to do everything as much as we can organically, locally, sustainable. So we're trying to move the restaurant in a direction to bring in some more local people and people from Chicago to check it out. It was a top 50 restaurant in Chicago, and we're trying to get back on that page and take it to the next level, actually. So,
and tell us about the menu that you've got there.
Yeah, the menu is all scratch cooking. Literally everything, just about everything on the menu is scratch cooking. Locally sourced from local farms in the area. We're in Palos Heights, so we use Eldenhurst Farms. Most of my meat's within 250 miles of Chicago. Cheese, everything's very local, as much sourcing as I can. The restaurant menu is very simple, on the borderline of elegant, yet very obtainable for a person to walk in and feel casual, not too overly stuffy. It's very, very approachable food, from a half chicken to bistro tenderloins to breakfast items that are super popular, like the Mount Biscuit, chicken and waffles, fried chicken Norris sandwiches, some really approachable food, but same quality that you're going to get at a really high-end restaurant in the city.
And but accessible.
Yes, very accessible. Very organic, very sustainable.
What's your favorite?
My favorite, it's a tough call. I just like to make delicious food that everyone's going to like. I don't really label myself as like an Italian chef or Oriental food. I like to just do a little bit of everything that makes everybody happy. And
but you worked with Jimmy Bannis?
Yes, worked for some pretty famous chefs, some of the best chefs in the country, from Jimmy Bannis to Keith Willis to Jeff Ryan, some guys you've seen on Chopped and whatnot, chefs that have worked for Michelin-starred restaurants. So I've trained from some of the best chefs out there.
It just sounds like a fantastic experience, and I know you brought some breakfast in for us to sample this morning, and I very, very much appreciate it. And how can they learn more about the restaurant?
They can check out our website. They'll be hearing a lot of info from Dahlia McCarthy, one of our good friends, Facebook, Instagram. The website's revamped with the new menu. You can always reach out to us as well if you got any questions. Dahlia McCarthy is a good source of information on Facebook as well.
And do you know the website offhand?
Yes, Harvest Room. So
harvestroom.com?
Yes.
Okay. And phone number?
I don't have it memorized.
All right. But it's on the website. It's on the website. We know it's there. Well, Chef Tyler Nelson, thank you so much for joining us this morning, and thanks for bringing in the breakfast. Very much appreciate it.
Yeah, enjoy.
Well, absolutely, we will. We'll enjoy it.
This is the Sunday Spin on 720 WGN. Once again, here's Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune.
Good Sunday morning. Welcome back to the Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson. We're continuing our spin through the national politics and another dramatic week in Congress on health care. Obviously, Senate Republicans unable to even muster a 50-vote majority, 51 votes, to advance any type of plan to change, repeal, replace, alternate, whatever you want to call it, on Obamacare. But things were just so difficult in watching the Senate Republicans that even for the Senate to even try to consider something required Vice President Mike Pence to cast a tie-breaking vote.
On this vote, the yeas are 50 and the nays are 50. The Senate being equally divided, the Vice President votes in the affirmative, and the motion is agreed to. The clerk will report the bill.
Calendar number 120, H.R. 1628, an act to provide for reconciliation.
So that's what kind of got things started. But after that, we know what happened. Democrats were angry about the efforts to repeal and replace Obamacare, warning that with each plan being offered up by Republicans, millions of Americans would lose health care. Here's Illinois' senior senator, Democrat Dick Durbin.
This is a bill about the health care system in the United States of America. There's not a single American living in our nation today who will not be affected by our vote this week, because we are in the process of deciding whether we will change health care in America, health insurance in America. And there's not a single one of us who doesn't have a health insurance plan, either private or public, or not affected by the health insurance industry in health care across the United States. In fact, healthcare itself represents 1/6 of the American economy. So we're being asked to vote on a bill this week that has not been printed and given to us, which will change healthcare for every single American and affect 1/6 of the American economy.
So in the end, the Republican plans went nowhere in the Senate, not even a so-called skinny plan that was aimed not even to become law, but just to get the House and Senate Republicans talking. That didn't even go anywhere. Casting the vote to kill that plan was Arizona Senator John McCain. McCain scheduled to return to Arizona for cancer treatment Monday. But when he returned to Washington to vote, he pleaded for civility.
I hope we can again rely on humility, on our need to cooperate, on our dependence on each other, to learn how to trust each other again, and by so doing better, serve the people who elected us. Stop listening to the bombastic loudmouths on the radio and television and the internet. To hell with them. They don't want anything done for the public good. Our incapacity is their livelihood. Let's trust each other. Let's return to regular order. We've been spinning our wheels on too many important issues because we keep trying to find a way to win without help from across the aisle. That's an approach that's been employed by both sides, mandating legislation from the top down without any support from the other side, with all the parliamentary maneuvers that requires. We're getting nothing done, my friends. We're getting nothing done.
That's Senator John McCain speaking on the floor of the United States Senate. Well, joining me now here in the studio, in the Allstate Showcase studio on Michigan Avenue, is Lauren Chulgen. She's the former now City Hall reporter for WBEZ.
First time I've heard that.
How does it make you feel?
Sad, but, you know, it's an adventure, right? I mean, I'm on to the next, Rick.
And you're on to the next,
yes.
And you're returning to your native New Hampshire.
I am indeed.
Well, you'll be working for...
New Hampshire Public Radio, which, yes.
And that's a network, isn't it, really?
It's so it's kind of the same way that BEZ works, where we're the affiliate station for NPR. So I will be filing most of what I do for their local newscast, but... You know, New Hampshire is a little bit different than Chicago, shocker. And so there aren't as many national reporters there covering New Hampshire news. So I might be filing more for the network than I do now. But I am still doing some politics. It's mostly feature and investigative reporting versus, you know, what I've been doing, as you know, on the Daily Beat. So it'll be different, that's for sure. And I will certainly miss.
What'll happen come primary time?
Well, then I'm going to be there. And then yeah. That'll be a little bit more of a Daily Beat. And I actually, as you know, Rick, grew up in New Hampshire. And so I'm very familiar with primary time. It's one of my favorite things about being from New Hampshire. And it's a fun place to be because I think, you know, residents feel very entitled to that.
Oh, absolutely.
And so they've got very good opinions, you know, Rick. They've got things to say. And I love that about New Hampshire.
Well, and that's actually, it's helpful to us.
Yes.
And it's the same in Iowa, too.
Oh, yeah.
That because of that kind of pride of authorship of being first.
Yes.
First caucus state, Iowa, first primary state, New Hampshire. And yes, people expect to be asked.
Oh, absolutely. And I think... In the off season, so to speak, I think
there is no off season. Well, come on,
in like the couple months of off season,
yes.
I don't know. I'm excited to. I was talking to the new team about this. That I'm excited to, you know, go to the diners where presidential candidates usually go when they're not there, and talk to voters about the big issues. I mean, we all know. If you follow the news, the opioid crisis is a huge issue in New Hampshire. But what are the other things that, you know, their policymakers, and there are so many of them in New Hampshire, what are the things that they want their legislators to be doing? You know, what are the big issues that impact them? And basically, Rick, any political or policy decision that impacts voters, I can report on it. So that'll be a lot wider of a scope than now where it's the city hall and the mayor.
But, you know, even though we are the 50 states, there's so commonality on
yes.
a number of issues.
Absolutely.
And you know, obviously, you know, don't tread on me.
Right.
And issues
live,
of pay
or die.
Issues of taxation. Issues like the opioid crisis,
absolutely.
For example, and that they affect us all.
Well, and you were just talking about healthcare. I mean, that's major league all across the country. And so these are, I was trying to think about ways that what I do here will impact what I do there. And obviously the characters are different. But some of the things...
characters is one way to put it.
That's a drum roll for that. Yeah, I mean, But if you think about the debates that we have about the minimum wage or about, you know, these are things that are being talked about everywhere, right? So I'm ready for that. It's a different scene, which I will miss this scene very much.
Duckpin bowling.
There is, yeah. Well, actually, when I went bowling out here the first time, I was very confused why all of the balls were so large. And I was like, this is so old school. We have candlepin, which is the small, small ball, and a lot of glow-in-the-dark candlepin, too. I did it as a kid, so.
Well, 16, it's like 16 softball.
Yeah, that was another thing when I moved out here. I played softball my entire life, and then I joined the BEZ softball team, and I was like, what the heck is this? But, yeah, maybe I'll bring it back. Maybe I'll start it in New Hampshire.
Actually, when Lauren and I were talking last week, and were reflecting on the fact that you're a graduate of St. Anselm College, and St. Anselm is where they historically have these presidential debates during the primary. And one of the coldest days I can ever remember, and that includes being from Chicago, was sitting in the back of a rented Ryder truck with the back of the truck wide open, looking out at the beautiful campus out at St. Anselm as a backdrop so I could do TV stand-ups for the Tribune stations post-debate. And there was a little heater in the back of the truck.
Not enough.
That little heater was actually for the camera guy and the producer, not for me.
Oh, sure.
So I'm standing, and of course, not with a coat on.
Right. You got to look good.
Suit and, yeah, well, as good as I can. But,
you look great.
But, and then you mentioned how you were at that probably 2008 debate.
Yeah, this is what was, you know, I've been, especially this week, so devastated to leave all of you, you know, in the press corps, people that I've looked up to for so long and then got to work with, which was just a dream. And then you and I were talking the other day about, like you say, you were in the same place that I was as an intern, running around, showing people where the bathrooms were and passing out scripts. And it's the journalism, especially the radio world, is so small. That and New Hampshire gets on such a national stage every 4 years that we're all going to be back in the same zone before you even know it.
Oh yeah, we'll see each other. There's no
absolutely.
There is no doubt about
that. But
what
a small world, Rick, you know?
And we'll probably be shopping at the shoe store next to WMUR.
Oh yes.
To buy where I do my every quadrennial boot pickup.
That's excellent.
It's a go-to must place. I mean, because everybody ends up at WMUR at some point.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, that's the one,
or something. The one
TV station in the, yeah.
Yes, the one that expands its newscast by several hours so that they can take advantage of all the ad buys that the candidates do.
It is, and I interned there before I moved out here, and, you know, this is, again, the voters. I mean, I would be the one answering the phones as the intern. People call that place all the time. People got opinions about everything in New Hampshire. You know, I'm really looking forward to that because there's nothing more exciting to me as a reporter than voters who are actually wanting to be involved in their political world.
Right. And you know what? I want to talk more about that.
Yeah.
And I'm not so sure I see that here.
I agree.
And let's talk about that when we come back. We're speaking with Lauren Chulgen. She's the former city government reporter for WBEZ-FM Chicago. I'm Rick Pearson. This is the Sunday Spin. Welcome back to the Not Howard Beale Show. This is Rick Pearson, and this is your Sunday Spin. And I'm here in the Allstate Showcase Studio in Tribune Tower on North Michigan Avenue with Lauren Chulgen. She's the outgoing.
There you go.
Is that a little better? Is that? She is the outgoing City Hall reporter at WBEZ-FM, returning to National Public Radio in her native New Hampshire.
Mm-hmm.
And we're talking about civic engagement.
Yes.
And, you know, working in New Hampshire, and everybody expects it's part of the process of politics and presidential national politics. I'm not sure that I see the same civic engagement in Illinois, in Chicago.
Agree.
I mean, we obviously, you know, this has been a unique time and we have protests almost on a daily basis, but it's a big city.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't mean to discount the cause people adopt, but that's kind of the nature of big cities. But I still, for the most part, I see a civic disconnect.
I would agree with that. I mean, the protest culture here is great. I mean, it's certainly alive and very well. But when it comes to, you know, political civic engagement, I mean, people don't know who their alderman is. I get asked that all the time. Oh, you're a City Hall reporter. Well, who's my alderman? Well, I don't know. I have to map it. You know,
right.
I mean,
like,
but I just think, and I don't know that people are paying close attention as much as we would like them to about the goings on at City Hall. Statewide, I mean, I'm not as on the pulse, but I think
you're on the pulse enough to know.
I think people are reading and watching somewhat, but with the budget crisis, I mean, you would think that every single person in the state would just be following it nonstop because it was just, it's such a crisis and outrage. And I just don't know that we really see that. And in a way that I've really noticed it is with the violence. I think not everyone in our city pays as close attention to or as feels as impacted by what an awful, awful situation our city is going through.
Because, and I have to wonder if it isn't just kind of the mindset in all of these subjects.
Yeah.
Of, well, if it doesn't affect you personally,
sure.
It's over there.
Yeah.
The budget crisis, well, I don't need the social services from the state. I don't have a kid going into higher education to a college that wasn't getting funded.
Right.
I don't need those safety net programs. It's over there. Mm-hmm. I don't live in the neighborhoods that are impacted most by the violence and the shooting, even though it's not an isolated to the west or south side anymore.
Right. And I think any alderman in the city would tell you they're not relevant until their resident needs something from them. Right. I mean, they're not, you know, people probably often don't just drop by and say, hey, thanks for that vote on that, whatever. You know what I mean? They come in and they say, hey, when are you going to take that tree down in my yard? So, you know, it's tough, but I think also it's because of the culture that in Chicago specifically has been created around what politicians do for their constituents. In the mind of a lot of Chicagoans, as I say, the alderman is there to do stuff for them, for their community. They're not there in a lot of constituents' minds to represent them on political issues. I mean, when we talk about the big debates that go on in city council, it's like we're in this bubble of city hall where aldermen will come up with these really impassioned opinions, and then they'll just go out, and what they really care about is making sure their residents vote for them. So let me go make sure your streets swept, and let me make sure all your lights are on. And so I don't know where you start, right? Do you start by having I don't know. It is something that I think about a lot because one of my jobs has been to kind of break down City Hall and make it more understandable for people. And I think that's because I want more people to be involved.
And I will say, through public radio, you have the opportunity to do kind of those longer form
for more time
explainers kind of thing, and you know, point out some of these impassioned speeches you hear on the floor of the chamber, but then how that relates to what you know. But here's the other story.
It's also, I mean, I don't want to blame constituents entirely because if you think about it, how do you get involved in the political process at City Hall? Okay, so you go to a committee meeting. Well, they're at 10 a.m. on a weekday, right? So, you know, I mean, how easy is it for your average working Chicagoan to be like, you know what? I really want to see a change in the way that we zone apartment buildings or whatever. How do you, besides go to your alderman's office at 6 o'clock when they actually are probably closed at that point? You know, so I don't know how accessible our political system is for people. So it's kind of like the cyclical thing where people aren't getting involved. I don't know. But the one that really bothers me now as a citizen and not a Chicago reporter is the violence. And I just wish that everybody in the city realized how much that impacts all of us. I was at, I think it was like last summer, I went to a concert in Millennium Park for Andrew Bird, and he started out the show. Now, Andrew Bird is, you know, like an indie folk artist, and he plays the violin and he whistles. And so the crowd is not very, you know, it's like a very hip young crowd. Okay. So not the demographic of people who are probably worried about violence, unfortunately. And he started off by bringing in this nonprofit, I think it's Project Orange, but regardless, all these mothers who had lost kids to violence, right? And everyone around me is like, oh my God, there was a shooting in Chicago today. Like they talked about like what shootings that happened today, how these mothers lost their children. And to see all of these people around me, mostly white, think, oh wow, this really is happening in our city. I was like, yeah, pay attention, you know, because I don't know. And I worry about that when it comes to the city because, you know.
Well, and it affects in a variety of ways mm-hmm. too. And it's, you know, you're going back to New Hampshire, but what are people in New Hampshire, what do they hear about Chicago?
Violence.
They hear about violence.
Oh, yeah. From the minute I got in for my interviews at NHPR, they were like, well, I'm sure you're excited to leave the gun violence. I'm like, well, I don't want to put it like that. And, I don't want to feel like anyone in the city feels like they have to run away from it. But it is. And it's the reason why, you know, if more people paid attention, it's also one of the reasons why the mayor is weaker now than he was in the first term, you know, because somebody has to stop this problem, and it's on him. You know, he wears that jacket. So.
Well, and especially, you know, when you look at still how successful Chicago is as a kind of a global city.
Sure.
And a tourism.
Number one for corporate relocations, Rick, as the mayor would say.
See, I knew you would be able to recite some of the.
What am I going to do with all this information?
but it is, yet you have the President of the United States routinely.
Oh, yeah.
And even beyond routinely in his last episode in
last
Long
week.
Island, where he went on for several minutes.
Yes.
About, of course, telling his version of how he also had a beautiful motorcycle brigade.
Oh,
300, I think he said, were in that. And that, of course, apparently was after the canceled UIC rally.
Right. Oh, yeah. Well, and the thing about that, too, Rick, is, you know, so the president will say these things, and then somebody will ask the mayor about it, and, you know, the routine goes on. And the mayor will shrug it off and be, you know, the tough is not the way that we need to deal with the violence thing. But it's still the president saying it, right? So if you're in Iowa or New Hampshire and you see on CNN, you know, Donald Trump talks about Chicago violence, you don't think, oh, well, now the mayor's going to – you think, oh, the violence must be really bad if the president is making the time, you know.
Even if it's Donald Trump.
Even if it's Donald Trump. I mean, it's just it's just because it's out there, then that's the reputation that our city gets for people who aren't paying attention every day to all the glorious things that are happening on here. So, I don't know. That's in a place where I would like our voters to get more involved, you know. Yeah.
So where do you see the city going?
I hope in a good place. Man.
I mean, you know, financially, we see.
Financially, I wish I had a good ROM quote. We're on the road to, what does he say? On the road to fiscal stability. I'm glad I'm slowly forgetting them. I think we're on a better track, but I think it's going to be a long road. I think that fiscally, I mean, God, pensions.
Right.
When I came here, pensions were not front of mind for me, Rick Pearson. Shocker. I cannot believe how detrimental our pension situation is to all taxpayers. And, you know, taxpayers are worried about, you know, the increased income tax from the state. Well, I mean, I can't imagine, you know, a couple years down the line when the city has to start paying even more into some of its city pensions to make up for, you know, what we've missed. Ugh, it's going to be rough. I mean, I remember covering the property tax debate and how aldermen were so concerned about their working residents and how are they even going to make up for it. And I just remember thinking, like, it's got to be only the beginning, you know,
right?
Because where do you get that revenue from? I'm sure there are a lot of city agencies that would say we're already kind of working on bare bones here. Fiscally, I think that's going to be a tough one. What else? What else can we think about that's coming down the pipe? I think gentrification is going to be something that's I worry and also think about, like, all right, if I come back in 2 years, if I come back to visit or whatever, how different is the city going to look and who gets impacted by that? You know, I live in Logan Square, which gets the benefits of that, right? We get a new bar and restaurant every time I turn around. But there's also families who have lived there for generations who are getting pushed out. And I think that's something that the mayor is going to have to handle for a while. And it's a very sensitive thing, because I know for him, he sees it as, you know, oh, great, we can develop and properties will be more valued. That's great for homeowners, right? Well, not all homeowners. So that's another thing. I don't know. There's a lot that's going on that I'm going to miss.
Well, I hope we will see you sooner than 2 years. Okay?
I would love to come back and sit in the, oh no, RIP the studio, actually. So I'm glad I get to see you while I can.
It's part of your exit interview.
You are my last one, Rick, and I'm honored that I got to come on with you.
Well, Lauren, I'm honored to have you on the show.
Thanks,
Lauren
so much.
Chulgen from New Hampshire.
New Hampshire.
Public Radio.
Thanks.
Thank you so much. We'll be back with more right after this.
Now back to the Tribune's Rick Pearson. It's the Sunday Spin on 720 WGN.
Welcome back to the second hour of your Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson. Earlier in the show, I played a cut from Senator John McCain returning to the Senate and talking about the need for civility, for talking on both sides, not just talking, but also listening on both sides. And, of course, civility starts at the top. And we had President Trump giving speeches last week and in Long Island, where he talked about how he likes police who are tough. And that, to paraphrase him, that you know how when you make an arrest, and he's speaking to police officers, you know how when you make an arrest and you're putting a suspect in the car and you put your hand on his head so he doesn't bump his head on the top of the car getting in, well, it's okay with me if you move his hand, if you take your hand away. And so police departments around the country are saying we do not condone violence or abuse, and you know, and you talk about, you know, police departments that have come under fire for these kinds of things. But here you have the president out making these speeches, and even though he was speaking to the Boy Scouts last week at their annual jamboree, he apparently thought he was on the campaign trail.
Dr. Price still lives the Scout oath, helping to keep millions of Americans strong and healthy as our Secretary of Health and Human Services, and he's doing a great job, and hopefully he's going to get the votes tomorrow to start our path toward killing this horrible thing known as Obamacare that's really hurting us. So.
Okay, this is the Boy Scouts Jamboree. And Dr. Price didn't get the votes. And I was a Boy Scout once. I can't say that when I was a Boy Scout, I would have necessarily been active in wanting to eliminate the scourge of Obamacare. Not that it existed then, but I wouldn't have known what legislation was necessarily going on in Washington. You know, here again, it's the president, and I'm watching Network in Millennium Park. Anyway, well, joining me here in the Allstate Showcase studio is State Representative Robert Martwick, Democrat from Chicago. Representative, thank you so much for joining me this morning.
Thanks, Rick. It's great to be here. I was just thinking, at least he was kind enough to thank all the Boy Scouts for voting for him.
Yeah. There were a number of things in that speech. There was he brought up, you know, what if my visage should be on Mount Rushmore? He said that it was a joke, but he said now the fake news is going to report that he said it. And it's like, well, okay, you said it.
Right.
And what do you think people are going to talk about? But nevertheless, that is kind of the world that we live in these days. I wanted to have you on the show for a couple of reasons. One is obviously the unsettled issue of school funding in Springfield. Two, you've been a longtime supporter of an elected school board in Chicago, and does that fit anywhere into this? But first, there was a story in the Chicago Sun-Times about a business that you have and issues of failure to report. And I just wanted to have you address this this issue about the
sure, yeah,
business consulting that you do.
Yeah, it's something that I've done on the side since 2005. It's never been a primary source of income. In fact, since I've been a state representative in the 5 years, the net amount of money that I have made for myself is $28,000 over 5 years. And only one of those years, we're required to disclose our interest in companies excuse me, when that income exceeds a certain threshold. And in this instance, there was only one of the 5 years in which I was required to report that. And I reported it one of the 5 years. I reported it in the wrong year. I should have reported it in 15. I reported it in 16 when I wasn't required to. It was an oversight. It was an error. Don't get me wrong. I proposed legislation that would even make reporting disclosures. It would even add to this, to add more to the disclosure, because I think it's important that people know it's a mistake I shouldn't have made. But well, it was minor, and I fixed it.
And you know? But you also said, too, that the way that the requirement for these disclosures is not as clear or cut as it should be.
No, and the reason that I caught my mistake was that after filling these out, I went to a staff lawyer and said, I'm not supposed to disclose this, right? Because I thought being a statement of economic interest, that I needed to disclose businesses that had an interest or were doing business with the state. And what they told me was, no, it's any business. And I said, okay, so I made a mistake. And there's no penalty, there's no crime. It's just you have to go back and amend, and that's been done.
All right. I just wanted to get that addressed.
Yeah, thank you.
Let's talk about school funding. And
it's good that somebody's talking about school funding because the governor doesn't want to.
Well, but we had this circumstance where last week has a press conference, or actually not even a press conference because he didn't take any questions. But the one time he did take questions and was asked, well, why don't you, you know, sit down with the Democratic leaders and talk about what you want to change in the school funding formula bill that is supposed to be being sent to the governor's desk on Monday. What do you want to change using your amendatory veto? And he said that talking was ridiculous. Right. Negotiating was ridiculous. But then on Friday, we have a statement from the governor directing Republican legislators to reach out to their Democratic counterparts to talk and negotiate.
Right. And of course, that is a glimmer of hope. One can only hope that it is real, that it is not like in the budget where he said, okay, legislators go sit down and talk. And then when they said, okay, we've got a deal, he said, nope, no deals. So one can only hope that it's real, that he would be willing to take that advice and that they're going to negotiate in good faith. But you bring up an interesting point because he's been screaming for a month, send me the bill, send me the bill. So, and he says, send me the bill so I can veto it. And of course, our leaders have said, no, let's sit down and talk about it. We don't want to have to deal with starting from scratch again after a veto. Let's sit down and negotiate. And he said, no, 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 until Friday. So had we sent it anytime before then when he was screaming at us to do it and he had issued a veto, well, that would have been unproductive. I'm hopeful that the bill is being sent on Monday to him, according to Senate President Cullerton. I'm hopeful that these discussions will bear fruit, that there will be some sort of compromise, because in the words of his own education secretary, the bill that's out there, SB1, was 90% of what he wanted. So hopefully we can solve that other 10% and we can get to some sort of school funding. We need to do it.
We're speaking with Democratic State Representative Robert Martwick from Chicago. I'm Rick Pearson. This is the Sunday Spin. Welcome back to your Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson. We're speaking with Democratic State Representative Robert Martwick from Chicago. But Representative, before I get there, just a couple of texts I want to address. One, got a very nice text from Mary thanking us for having Lauren Chulgen on the show, and she thought she had already gone to New Hampshire, so she was happy to at least hear her one last time on radio in Chicago. But then I got this text in regards to the president's remarks, and the text was, Trump's speech to scouts appealed to his base. You miss the point because he offends your liberal sensibilities, Rick. Actually, no, I think you're missing the point. He was speaking to the Boy Scouts. It has nothing to do with political base. You're speaking to the Boy Scouts. And when presidents speak to the Boy Scouts, it's normally a discussion about what it means to be an American. And there's patriotism and a sense of respect others, which is a vital part of being a Boy Scout. It has nothing to do with appealing to your political base. He can go make that speech anywhere. You don't make that kind of a speech to the Boy Scouts. That's just simple common sense. All right, enough of my ranting on that. Now let's rant about school funding and that issue with the Representative Martwick. Before the break, I wanted to point out that this issue of negotiations, which, you know, hopefully is a good thing,
right?
But there's only a couple of choices as legislators that you're faced with if the governor does make an amendatory veto, the ability in the Constitution to rewrite legislation. One is you accept his recommendations for change, or you don't.
Right.
Or you override and return the bill back to its original form, or you don't. If either one of those fails, the bill's dead. There is no school funding from the state. There is no school funding formula from the state. So if you're at a point where the bill is still being held in the Senate, and the governor has kept saying, send me the bill so I can fix it and rewrite it. But the fact that it hasn't gone to the governor's desk on a procedural hold would allow for the bill to be amended and with a negotiated agreement before it went to the governor's desk. So by presenting the bill to the governor creates very limited options except for having to start over again.
Right. Right. And that's a very important part of it is you know, I often say to people who ask about the budget or SB1, they say, is this perfect? And I say, perfect, no. It's certainly not everything I would want, but that's the nature of democracy. If I got everything I want, it wouldn't be a democracy. It'd be a dictatorship, and, well, I'd be the dictator. And that's not how the process works. You go with a set of goals that you want to accomplish through your legislation, and then when you realize that you have to satisfy interests from people that disagree with you, you compromise. And we did that with the budget. Again, far from perfect, but we compromised and we got something done. And it's so critical now to allow school children to go back. I say this often, a day lost in school is a day that is so very hard to make up. You can tack on a few days at the end of the year, but once you start getting that schedule too far off, and you're talking about over 100 school districts that won't be able to open if we're not able to get this done. This bill represents, as I said, 90% of what the governor, he himself said he wanted to achieve in school funding reform. It's an issue that everyone agrees with. We need to negotiate and find that difference and get this thing done. And I'm willing to compromise. I've said it from the beginning. My favorite speech on the floor while we've been down there for the special session was the House sponsor, Will Davis. After a series of Republicans got up and said, we should be talking about this, we should be finding solutions, Will Davis got up after about the sixth Republican spoke and said, I'm the chief sponsor of this bill. You all say you want to talk and fix this, but none of you have called me. I haven't gotten a call from you, Leader Durkin. I haven't got a call from you, Mr. Pritchard. I haven't got a call. And, you know, it's like we've got to get we got to be talking to get the process going. So that's hopefully the good thing that will come out of Friday. But, yeah, we need to get something done really in a bad way.
Well, and I mean, but it just shows how messed up the process is that there couldn't even be any agreement on what negotiation means.
Well, right, and that's where I think that you see the inexperience of the governor's office, having never served in government before this, and everything has been since he has arrived has been a battle. We've not worked, very little have we worked on collaborative and got anything done. Small bits of legislation, but not really anything profound. It's always been a struggle. And if you're constantly working against someone, you really don't know what the process requires to work with someone, and that's where we're at.
Well, and also what I note too is that in his statement on Friday, he was directing Republican lawmakers to work with Democrats.
Yeah.
And here again, much as we saw with the budget situation, he's deferring to legislative process rather than becoming part of the conversation.
Yeah, and this is something that often, you know, obviously I disagree with the governor on a lot of things, but I've always said and I maintain this, that I love democracy and everyone's entitled to their opinions. And while I may disagree with the governor, I don't think he's crazy. I don't think he's wrong. I disagree with his policy, right? Where I criticize him is his what seems to be an ongoing inability to govern. When a bill is at the point that it's at in the process, where it's passed both chambers of the legislature, and it's very close to being soup, when it's close to being done, that's the point when the governor is supposed to sit down with the legislative leaders. You don't have to like him. He doesn't have to like Madigan and Cullerton. No one has to like them for that matter. But while they hold their positions as leadership, it's your job to sit down and solve those last bits so you can get something done instead of running the train off the tracks. He always seems to take the second option instead of the first. And this is where he should be sitting down with the leaders, showing that respect to the process that it requires to get something done, not punting the ball to somebody else. But again, at least the two sides are talking.
I also want to ask you, you've been a longtime supporter of elected school board in Chicago.
Yes.
And that legislation continues to just kind of get bollocksed up.
Yeah.
Is it because the mayor doesn't want it?
Oh, I think there's a large part of that. The mayor is very, very close to it, and he has exerted as much pressure as he can over the legislature to bottle it up. It's close. It passed the House, went to the Senate, and the Senate amended it. There is a part of the amendment that that our leadership really does not like and will not pass. So we're going to send it back to the Senate and see if we can't change what they did. But we're real close on it. I believe it's a bill that I'm hopeful that by veto session, when we continue on, that we'll be able to get this done. The problem has been that, as important of it as an issue as it is, the oxygen in the room has been consumed by first the budget and now education funding reform, which I'd like to sneak the elected school board in with this, but it's not happening.
That.
No. I tried.
I figured that you tried to slip an amendment in on that.
Yeah.
But you know, there are concerns, and the governor's office has expressed concerns about too much union influence in a elected school board process.
Well, and that's you know, everyone should be concerned about influence over elections. We have them with dark money PACs, with unions, with business groups, with billionaires who throw countless money into elections. We see that with our gubernatorial race on both sides of the aisle. So yeah, you should always be concerned about influence over elections, and you should do as I did in the crafting of the bill, write provisions into the bill that will limit that influence as much as possible. But as long as we're in a democracy, the argument cannot be, oh my gosh, there's a chance that there'll be influence over the elections. We better not have elections. I mean, in a democracy, that's part of the process. So, you know, I wrote a bill that's very tight, that has many conflict of interest provisions in there. The idea of drawing down to smaller districts to limit the influence of outside money. You know, we tried to do as much as we could. I was very cognizant of that in the drafting of the bill, and I think we accomplished it. I think it's a good bill. Whether the governor will or not, I don't know, but I'd like to just get it to his desk and see where we go from there.
That's Democratic State Representative Robert Martwick from Chicago. Representative, thank you so much for joining me here in the Allstate Showcase studio.
Thanks for having me, Rick.
We'll be back with more right after this. Up ahead on the Sunday Spin, we'll be speaking with Alderman Anthony Beal from Chicago's 9th Ward on the South Side.
Now the Sunday Spin continues on 720 WGN. Here's Rick Pearson.
A beautiful Sunday morning in downtown Chicago. I'm Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune here in the Allstate Showcase studio in Tribune Tower on a beautiful, sunny North Michigan Avenue. Joining me on the phone is Chicago Alderman Anthony Beal from the 9th Ward. Alderman, thank you for joining me this morning.
Thanks for having me, Rick. How you doing?
I'm doing very well, thank you. I wanted to have you on after you and I talked last week when you were attending an event in South Shore involving Chris Kennedy's candidacy for governor. And Kennedy, as a candidate, has talked increasingly with a great deal of criticism about the property tax system in the state, the tax system in Cook County, and speaking very critically about the way properties are being assessed. And you indicated he's the only guy talking about this, and that's why you were on the Kennedy train. But I mean, tell me what you feel about the assessment process.
Well, let me just say, Rick, I'm basing everything off of the study that was done. I think it was by the MacArthur Foundation. And that study came out a couple of weeks ago, and they started having hearings on it in the county. And, you know, after reading up and listening to the results of the study, I thought it was just extremely troubling that if the study is true, that, you know, communities like mine are being over-assessed. And so I want to get to the bottom of it. Chris Kennedy is talking about it. He's the only one talking about it. And so, you know, in my opinion, is if something is wrong with the system that is assessing properties throughout this entire county, where certain communities are being overassessed and other communities are being underassessed, I think that's a huge, huge problem. So I want to get to the bottom of it. And if you look at the people who are running for governor right now, you know, he's the only one talking substance Everybody else is trying to buy the election, but they're not talking about what they're going to do. They're not trying to say these are the problems. These problems need to be addressed. And Chris, in my opinion, is the only one talking about that.
And the issue comes down to the, I mean, and the Tribune had exhaustive reporting on the issues involving how properties are assessed in Cook County, and how it's poor property wealth portions of the city, those also in Cook County, suburban Cook, but that those poorer properties are the burden of assessment is falling on them less so than the wealthier, more valuable properties. And so that it's a burden shifting is what it is.
Absolutely. And if that's the case, communities that are black and brown of color that are being overassessed are the same communities that are getting the least amount of services, that have the worst school systems. You know, so all these things are happening, but we, you know, percentage wise, they're paying the most. So that's an injustice when you look at how the, you know, the entire system is being rolled out. And then, you know, on top of that, when you look at the fact that, you know, crime is running rampant, there are no jobs in certain communities, you know, systematically, when you look at the foreclosure crisis, systematically, now you see why this could potentially be one of the reasons why you have so many foreclosures in black and brown communities, because they're being systematically taxed out of their homes.
Right. And it just it perpetuates the cycle.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, I have one of the oldest communities in the nation. That study was done back in 1998. You know, I have a very older population. And so the foreclosure crisis hit my community the hardest because predatory lenders were preying on my community. Well, who knew that the tax system was preying on my community also? So I just want to get to the bottom of it, because I think that has a direct reflect on why there are so many vacant properties, vacant homes, and foreclosures in the black and brown communities.
And, you know, we should look at this also not just from Chicago and Cook County, but statewide, in the issue of why, you know, the issue of assessment is so important is because of the reliance of how we fund our schools.
Our school system, you know, should not be relied on property taxes. We need to, you know, we need to shift that burden. So there's a whole host of things that need to take place to try to right the wrong that have been taking place over the last, I would say, 40, 50 years. And if we don't do something about it, then, you know, you're going to continue to see people leaving the states, leaving the city, because the opportunities are just not there. You know, I believe Chicago and Illinois should be leading the country in innovation and job creations and things like that. But we're not. People are leaving the city because of the poor education system, the high crime, and the lack of opportunity. And that's why people are leaving. They're being taxed out.
Alderman, we've got a call from Ron. Ron, as always, welcome to the Sunday Spin.
Yes, good morning, Ricky. Good morning to the Alderman. Alderman, I know you said you supported Kennedy relative to this position, but for point of clarification, these tax matters, aren't they more related to the county? Aren't they governed by the county? So I want to find out what your position particularly regarding burials. But can you make the point of clarification for us that that has a lot to do with county matters as opposed to with the governor's office? Thank you very much.
Well, absolutely. This is a county matter. But when you look at it, this is a county matter that's affecting poor communities. And that's why, you know, I'm speaking out on it, because if it's not fair and it's an injustice, you know, I think I have a responsibility to speak out on it. And this has nothing to do with burials. This has to do with the system. And I believe this was probably in place before burials even took office. And so, you know, we just need to get to the bottom of it. Everybody should be assessed at the same rate. There shouldn't be two tiers or three tiers assessments throughout the entire county. It should be one assessment, and everybody should be paying the same rate. No different than what they're talking about on the federal level. On the federal level, people are being taxed at a different rate. The rich are being taxed at a lower rate, and middle class and lower class are being taxed at a higher rate. That's wrong, and we need to right these wrongs that have been hurting our communities for a very long time. So, you know, and the reason I'm supporting Kennedy is because Kennedy is the only one that's talking about this. He's the only one saying we need to right this wrong as far as the assessor system, the assessment system that's put in place.
Well, I think there, and there's 2 points here, and Ron does bring up a good point. And I know you talked about, you know, Berrios and the system, but there also needs to be some clarity out of the assessor's office about how assessments are done. And that was something that the Tribune story, you know, found that there were issues with because of what the formula is to do more accurate property assessments. And mm-hmm. so I think clarity is an issue there. And yes, while it is a county issue, the fact of schools throughout the state being so over-reliant on property taxes for funding does kind of, even though property taxes are a local funding source, the fact of the public school system statewide being so dependent on property taxes does, I think, raise this to the level of a state issue, because the only way you're going to lessen that reliance on property taxes for public schools in this state is through more state tax revenue. And how do you achieve that? And that's kind of the ultimate question there. And Kennedy has talked about, as frankly, all of the major Democratic contenders for governor have talked about, wanting to have a graduated income tax rate in the state rather mm-hmm. than a flat tax that would tax wealthier incomes with a higher levy than lower incomes. But Kennedy's also talked about what he calls a basket of taxes to try to change the over-reliance on property taxes. But he's not calling for an elimination of them, just a lesser reliance on them for school funding.
Absolutely.
So I think that's how it kind of fits into this whole picture. I wanted to ask you too about, I mean, you talked about how the issues of foreclosure were hitting heavy, and there still is the fact, and people in the suburbs are their property is assessed at a much greater level than in the city. And mm-hmm. so, I mean, when you find that inherent problems in assessment, it strikes in different ways, depending on where you
live. Absolutely. Depending on where you live. Absolutely.
But when you do find the issue of communities that are most in need of kind of governmental services and schools and education, and they're paying the burden of it, and there ought to be some formula there for what goes in goes back out.
Well, it's going out, but it's definitely not coming back in, right?
Yeah, but I mean, it would seem that there ought to be some kind of a independent kind of way to find a mechanism to account for that,
right? To give the communities that need more resources to help their communities be just like everybody else's.
But it's with the city council, it's always a competition for resources, right?
Well, this one, I talked about this the other day. There's, a pot of gold, and everybody's trying to put their hand in that pot of gold, and we're all fighting for that same resources, and, it just depends on who can get the resources and where the priorities on where those resources go. So, I'm always trying to bring resources into my community. We're trying to always look for different ways to get creative funding back into the area. But, it just seems like you always fall short when it comes to certain communities.
We're speaking with Chicago Alderman Anthony Beal from the city's 9th Ward. I'm Rick Pearson. This is the Sunday Spin. Back to the Sunday Spin, the theme from the Howard Beal Show. I'm Rick Pearson.
I told you that music works very well.
Yes. We may consider making that the new theme song. Alderman, thanks for putting up with that. I'm speaking with Alderman Anthony Beal from Chicago's 9th Ward. I wanted to ask you about these revelations about TIF funding, always a very controversial issue, but revelations about $55 million in TIF funding that was supposed to be or had been viewed was needed to acquire land for the new big hotel at McCormick Place. But in essence, it was $55 million in TIF money that then got transferred to Navy Pier to pay for the improvements at Navy Pier. It reminds me of how the state lottery money was supposed to go to education, which it does. But at the same time, that meant the state didn't have to put in as much money. And that's kind of what this looks like.
Right. It wasn't an addition to education. It was a swap of funds.
Right. And the BGA and Cranes reported the story and have the emails that basically say that the money would come in from the TIF money, and then it was sent to the Navy Pier project.
Right.
I mean,
well, they claimed it was a reimbursement. We had a hearing on it last week, and I want to commend Alderman Pat Dowell for attacking this very aggressively because, you know, she supported that project wholeheartedly.
Oh, yeah. I mean, she was and I saw her after the story came out. And to say she was angry and felt blindsided would be to put it mildly.
Absolutely.
And because she was very much active out front as, you know, what that development and McCormick Place means and things for Brownsville and you know, you got the Paul Arena going in there and that kind of, I mean, just mm-hmm. for economic development there. And then then to see this kind of fiscal sleight of hand.
Well, one thing about TIF, you can use TIF in so many different ways. And when you're dealing with financing on a level where you're trying to put projects together and you're dealing with tens of millions of dollars, you can always get creative in how you finance in these deals. And, you know, you can always hide how things are being funded and you know, kind of use the system to your advantage if you're looking at trying to accomplish something without really tipping your hand on how you're getting these things funded. You know, you can always do that with creative financing. And so that's one of the reasons why people have been asking for transparency as it relates to the TIFs. But TIFs are so complex. They're so confusing. You know, you really have to deal with them every single day to really understand them thoroughly. And so you can always move money. You know, it's almost like a shell game with TIF and other financing. You got new markets tax credits you can be using. There's all kind of different ways you can use funding for these projects. And so I think what happened on this particular project, it was a reimbursement, but it just gave the impression that TIF money was used for, you know, something that was not supposed to be used for. And so I think we got to the bottom of it. Again, Alderman Dowell did a very good job at the hearing and got to the bottom of it because she really felt blindsided in how this was done. And it wasn't communicated to her how it was going to be done. They just said, well, this is what we're going to do. And so, you know, she didn't know how they were going to move the money around, and I think she just felt blindsided by that.
Well, and of course, TIFs are always come up when there are issues involving the problems of Chicago public school funding. And,
right.
And I mean, do we have too many TIFs in this city? Is too much of the city covered with TIFs?
No, I don't think so. I think, you know, there are not enough projects on the books. We need to, you know, get a lot more projects done to use TIF money, because that's what TIF money is for, is to help bridge projects so we can bring jobs and services to underserved communities. And so it's effective from what we're using it for, but I just don't think we're aggressively having enough projects, because we do have a lot of TIF money. And I'm going to tell you, if I had my way, you know, with my project that I have, we use a lot of TIF money. I could use a lot more. But my TIFs are tapped out because I have aggressively brought jobs and opportunities into the area. And so I need more TIF money. And, you know, certain areas don't need as much TIF money as communities like mine. So I'm a fan of TIFs. Do we have enough TIFs? You know, I mean, they do expire after 23 years. I don't think we have too many of them. But again, I just think we need more projects to spend the TIF money on.
One other issue that came up last week was the issue of the plans from the mayor to offer people who got traffic camera tickets another chance to contest the validity of those tickets and to get some kind of reimbursement from that.
Right.
And you kind of have questioned, given what the fine is, the reimbursement level doesn't sound compensatory. Is that correct?
It's definitely correct. Well, you know, a few months ago, last year, in 2016, we knew this lawsuit was out there, this class action lawsuit with the red light camera. We knew it was out there, and we tried to change some rules and regs. And also, the city recognized that the second notices weren't going out, and fines were doubled on a lot of these tickets without the people having a second chance on paying these tickets. And so we tried to change that rule and gave the people an opportunity to apply for this money to head the lawsuit off, but it didn't work. And so the city, we ended up losing a $39 million judgment, and we're having to pay that money out. And now you look at the lawyers are the ones walking away with $11.7 million, and then you have $12 million that's being forgiven. That leaves about $15 million, and you have, I think, 1.8 million people that's going to be splitting, $15 million. And that comes out to, you know, if you break it down, anywhere between $7 and $15 if 100% of the people apply to get their money back, they're not getting full reimbursement.
And, I mean, you're talking about $100 late fees and that kind of, I mean, these were significant payments that were made by people.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And so, I believe the lawyers are the ones that use this system. And once again, they use people who were being violated by these tickets. Now, the system was flawed. The second notices weren't gone. We're not, mitigating the fact that the system was flawed from the very beginning. But when you have lawyers that come in and take the bulk of this money, they found an opportunity to basically get rich. And they did it off the backs of people who can least afford to pay these tickets. And they're getting reimbursed a very minimal amount. Well, they're headed to the bank with their pot of gold of $11.7 million. So I think something is wrong with that system as a whole. And I understand the legal system. I understand class action lawsuits. But it's the people that are the ones that are hurting. And the lawyers are the ones that walk away with all the money because they're supposed to be negotiating for the people when actually they're just negotiating for themselves.
That's Anthony Beal. He's the alderman from Chicago's 9th Ward on the South Side. Alderman, thank you so much for joining me this morning on the Sunday Spin.
No, thank you so much, Rick. Really appreciate it.
We'll be back with more right after this. Well, that's all we have time for on this week's edition of the Sunday Spin. I want to thank my guests this morning, Lauren Chulgin, the new correspondent for New Hampshire Public Radio, formerly of WBEZ-FM, State Representative Robert Martwick, Democrat from Chicago, and 9th Ward City Alderman Anthony Beal. Most of all, I want to thank all of you for listening. And, Dean Richards, I'm going to go out and enjoy this beautiful weather today. This has been the greatest stretch of weather that I can remember for quite some time.
It has been. It's been a gorgeous day. It's beautiful. And I just found a new way to get myself in a good mood to start the show after all these years. You try to find new ways to pump yourself up to get in a good mood. Right in front of our showcase studio window, there's a little yellow lab puppy that they're taking a picture of. Very, very handsome couple with a that's a yellow lab, right? Yellow lab puppy.
I couldn't.
Can you turn that on, Bob? Can you turn the mic on outside? What kind?
Golden retriever.
Golden retriever. Golden retriever. Look, how cute is that puppy? Can you see it?
Oh, how cute. Yes, indeed.
Can you be here every Sunday morning at 9 o'clock?
Yes, please.
If you could be out here every Sunday
morning. Actually, 7 o'clock would be better for me if you could work that for me.
Life is better with puppies.
Always.
Life is better with cute puppies.
Yes, indeed.
What's the puppy's name?
Lady.
Oh, how long have you had Lady?
She's 15 weeks, and we've had her since about 8 weeks.
Yeah, everything going okay?
Perfectly
behaved?
Wonderful.
Liars. You're both liars.
Yeah. Know how that one works.
Yeah. Well behaved. Lady's just sitting there.
Well behaved. Because of the mellifluous tones that she's hearing. Yes, indeed.
Okay, so ladies are going to sit out in front of the window for the next 4 hours, and that puts a smile on my face.
It should,
no matter what else is happening. I'm just in an awe mood.
I need to go find some treats.
Who cares what's going on in the world? Ladies here.
Indeed, indeed.
Not going to get any better than that.